But first, Dan Cummins is here in the studio with me. He's an instructional designer for academic technology services at UC Davis. He consults often with faculty as well as designing innovative online and hybrid courses with an emphasis in improving educational pedagogy and new technologies. He's a genius with video, with interactive educational media production, and he's deeply involved in creating and supporting courses for UC Online, which you all might know is a UC system-wide initiative that aims to enhance class choices, alleviate overcrowding and high-demand courses, and improve student time to degree for UC students, as well as to broaden access to high-quality education for students outside of UC. Dan's worked for UC Davis for 8 years, supporting faculty, staff, and students. He has a BA in Digital Media Communication Studies from Sac State and an MA in Educational Technology from San Diego State University. We're happy to have him here. Dan Cummins, welcome to Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour.
Thanks, Andy. It's good to be here.
Great to have you here. So, an instructional designer, I'm sure you find yourself on airplanes and so forth from time to time where after you say what that is, you have to go ahead and explain what that is. So why don't you go ahead and explain it to people listening at home?
Yeah, that's right. I don't even know if my wife knows exactly what I do. But it can be a lot of different things. Primarily, though, it is the ability to help faculty think through their pedagogy and to decide on how to do various assignments in a different way, how to create assessments that measure student learning, coming up with learning objectives. And then my particular focus is to help with getting faculty used to teaching with technology. In particular, I'm helping a lot of faculty with online and hybrid courses here at UC Davis. And it can be a challenging job at times because some faculty, you know, are very set in their ways and don't want to do things in a different way. But after talking with them, they generally want to do what's best for improving their teaching, and so they're willing to try different things out.
It's interesting with your graduate work at San Diego State University, you come to the table with more current knowledge of not only latest technologies but latest thinking about how to teach adults, and yet you're interacting with faculty who have the deepest possible knowledge in their content areas. So it must be part of that challenge must be to negotiate, well, which of these core principles should be emphasized over the other guy's core principles.
No, that's right. I mean, the field of education pedagogy is very vast. You have everything from Bloom's taxonomy to Kant's work and a couple other people, but they're all kind of going after the same thing, just in different ways. My personal favorite model for instructional design is the successive approximation model, which was written by Michael Allen. He's written actually a couple books on it now, and he actually is focused on primarily online instruction and e-learning. He actually runs a company that focuses on the development of e-learning modules for companies and universities. And so his books have particularly resonated well with me because I have a strong background in media production, and that's how I find most media production happens, is it's a successive approximation. You try something out, you see if it meets the faculty needs, see if it meets the student needs, and you decide whether it does or doesn't, what tweaks you need to make. You go back to the drawing board and or the computer and redo some things and improve it, and then you just kind of keep doing that cycle over and over and over again. And it's kind of a newer approach, even though it's kind of in many ways it's like doing the classic ADDIE model of which stands for analyze, design, develop, implement, and evaluate. And you're kind of doing it over and over and over again in a kind of a rapid fashion. And it really helps with developing learning modules at a very rapid pace, which is very important both in the corporate and the academic world.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dan Cummins, and he's an instructional designer here at UC Davis. We're talking about the new challenges of teaching students when there are so many online tools and distractions available. Well, Dan, let's get into some of those tools. I think many people in the UC Davis community are familiar with SmartSight, but you're really knowledgeable about especially ways that one can use new tools, media tools, including use of visuals, video, audio, etc. Why don't you say a little bit about some of those tools and give us some examples of how they're used?
Sure, yeah. So one of the things that I really like to work with my faculty on is finding tools, online tools, that really help them achieve a different way of going about their teaching, particularly since we're trying to help a lot of our faculty think about teaching both online and hybrid courses. And The most interesting thing is in the last, I'd say, 3, 4, 5 years, there's just been an explosion of what I call Web 2.0 tools that involve a lot of social media and a lot of interesting interactions between students with other students, students with the faculty, via a some sort of computer-mediated mechanism. So a couple of some of the really good ones are VoiceThread, Piazza, Quizlet. There's, Google Docs obviously has gained a lot of ground in recent years. There's just, so many. I mean, I have a bookmark list of well over 100 in various categories that that I share with faculty routinely. And the trick is, though, not to just use a tool for a tool's sake, which many faculty kind of sort of jump to that conclusion because, tools are fun. Being online is fun. As students, they like using Facebook. Faculty members, most of them aren't using Facebook, but they enjoy using innovative tools that help them with their teaching. That's where they get their fun. So one of the best ones, I think, is Piazza, and I'd highly recommend that faculty kind of check that one out. It's a question and answer discussion tool, and it can really help cut down on email for faculty, and also helps create a learning community around the various content that is in a course.
Piazza, that's P-I-A-Z-Z-A?
Yes, piazza.com, and it's completely free to use, as many of these Web 2.0 tools are, and it's really helped a lot of the faculty I work with cut down on email and really help the students interact with each other discussing the content in a much more unique fashion than before.
That's great. Well, Dan Cummins is my guest here on Dr. Andy's Poetry and Technology Hour, and we are really happy to have him here. He, like everyone down here at KDBS, is excited that the Spokes will be joining us soon to sing, and that one of their leaders, Rachel Riley, is here in the studio. And she was wondering what sort of questions she'd be asked. I told her mostly math and physics. So we'll see if we follow up on that and if she doesn't mind. But we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will talk a little bit more to Dan Cummins about his work as an instructional designer here at the University of California at Davis. Right now, Dan Cummins is in the studio, and we're talking about instructional technology, pedagogy, and other multisyllabic words. Dan, tell me about some of the projects that you're working on. You talked about UC Online briefly. We have faculty here at UC Davis, don't we, who are teaching or piloting online courses?
We do, in fact. And I have been working with them intimately to get these courses going. A course that's actually going right now that maybe some of your listeners are even taking is the Global Climate Change course, which is a course that is unique to UC Davis. One of the reasons that Arnold Bloom, the professor of that course, wanted to take the course online and worked with UC Online and myself to bring it to cyberspace is that he wanted to have the ability to not only teach other UC students throughout the state about global climate change, but also to to teach the masses about global climate change too. He's actually, now that he has almost all of his content done, he is preparing to offer a MOOC of his content, which is actually pretty exciting. And so anyone will
What's
be able,
a MOOC?
Oh, sorry. A MOOC is stands for a massively open online course. You can kind of almost imagine it as, you've probably heard of games like Warcraft and things like that. Those are called, what are those called? I forget.
Those are called MOOCs?
Yeah.
Massively open online
games.
MOOGs.
MOOGs. There you go.
All right.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's the same concept except obviously with education. And he's created some pretty innovative things using an e-learning authoring tool called Adobe Captivate. He has a little bit of video, and then he has a quiz question or other sort of data visualization interaction right after a segment of about 3 to 4 minutes. And he kind of keeps that cycle going throughout about a 12-minute segment. And the theory behind that is that if you show students just a small snippet of content and then sort of let them check their understanding of it or sort of play with that content a little bit more, they will remember it more later. So we've had some pretty good success with that course.
That's great. You know, I'm teaching a T.S. Eliot course this summer, and I'm thinking of front-loading a few of my scintillating lectures so that students can watch them over and over again. But this idea of including assessments, I think it's a smart one, especially when we're focused, as you especially are, on student learning and verifying that students are leaving something, leaving our courses with something worth remembering and worth applying.
Mm-hmm.
We're hanging out with Dan Cummins and talking about instructional technology and the ways that it is applied and being piloted here at the University of California at Davis. And Dan, I understand that recently you've launched a wedding videography business.
That's right. I've been doing wedding videography kind of on the side for a long time, but now I'm actually really starting to offer my services a little bit more widely. So I've created a website, CumminsMedia.com, C-O-M-I-N-S, Media.com. And I actually am going to be at the Weddings and More show right here at UC Davis, in fact, in this very building, Freeborn Hall, this Sunday. It's a bridal show. They're expecting roughly 400 or so brides to come and check out various vendors in the Yolo County area. And so this is going to be my first time doing that, and we'll see how we do.
That's great. I encourage you to bring your calendar and clear out your summer, because some of those brides and grooms may be calling on you for your services. Dan Cummins is here. He's an instructional designer here at University of California at Davis. We were talking earlier about his work with faculty and improving teaching and learning, especially with online courses. We also touched briefly on Dan's work as a videographer. He has started a business and a website recently called CumminsMedia.com. And I remember how music functioned at my wedding, Dan, and I think you just got married in the last year as well. But how would you try to videotape the spokes if you were tasked to do so at a wedding that you attend as a videographer?
Well, the key thing would be capturing all of their beautiful voices with some audio equipment, because
right.
No video is good without audio. And they were just – those were angelic voices. I was really impressed with listening to them. In terms of the video, what you'd want to do is you'd have two or three cameras set up, and you would have a wide shot, and then if it's only one person, that one person, probably me, would be getting close-ups of each of the singers, making sure that you're well aware of who's going to be doing the soloing and that sort of thing to capture all of that. And then if you've got an extra person on hand, you can have them get reactions from the crowd and all sorts of fun stuff like that, especially the bride and groom, to see how they're liking the beautiful music the spokes would be doing as well.
Absolutely. I remember it at my wedding 21 years ago this coming September. I think what we did is we put one camera up on a tripod and then everyone sat down. And you know what else was great? Not a single person took out his or her smartphone during the entire ceremony and tried to film anything. Of course, it was 1992. and here in 2013, of course, everyone, you know, with one or two exceptions, has a smartphone. And so they'll want to get those out. But I have a friend who is a professional photographer. She does weddings. And she's had this conversation with people at weddings where, say, like a father-in-law steps forward and says, yeah, you know, you take good pictures and so forth, but look at me, I got this $2,000 camera, I can just do what you do, you know, I'm not really sure why we needed to hire you. And likewise, a lot of people will get out their smartphones and, you know, film the event from multiple perspectives that could be edited together. Why not just rely on available talent, Dan Cummins, instead of going to a professional?
Well, that is an excellent question, both on a photography side and a videography side. For one thing, most of the people who you would ask to help you with that, you want involved in the wedding in some way, shape, or form. The other thing is that no matter how much they may say they have this great equipment, they probably don't. Some of the equipment I have is in the thousands of dollars, and again, without a professional, nuanced approach, you won't get really good, clean-sounding audio. You won't get to hear the vows at a wedding. You won't get to hear the great music, whether it's live or from a DJ in your video. You also don't have the expertise of editing those things all together, syncing different video cameras, possibly syncing up with photos from the photographer, producing a professional Blu-ray DVD disc that someone could play on their high-definition television set, that sort of thing. All of that takes a lot of skill and work and equipment. I went to school for about 3 years in that particular videography major to learn how to do those sorts of things. And I feel I learned a thing or two about producing pretty good quality video.
That said, the pressure is really raised for you because now that you're going to be doing this as a business at arguably the most important moment at the life of at least two people and maybe more than two people, it's really important that you not screw up.
That is very true. If you have someone who is not a professional, you know, the pressure is off of them a little bit because they're your friends and you're not going to, you know, worry too much. You hope they get everything, but they may not. You know, I've done a lot of these wedding videos in the past for friends, and I've recently done a few for people I didn't know just to kind of get my feet wet a little bit. I have yet to miss any important events because I always keep a good shot list and making sure I coordinate with the other professionals that are involved in the wedding day, whether that be the pastor, the DJ, the wedding coordinator, if there is one, the building coordinator for the reception, that sort of thing. So it takes a certain level of professionalism and having done it a few times to know when to get the right shot and when to make sure you're in the right place at the right time. And that's something that a non-professional might not be used to.
Absolutely. This is KDBS 90.3 FM in Davis. You know, we've got rules against plugola at this radio station, which means that I can't talk about any kind of business that I'm in if I would gain any financial gain from it. However, as you may know, I started marrying people this past summer, but I've never charged anyone for it. So if I mention that, plugola or not, what do we think? Evan says no. Dan?
I don't think so because they're not charging for it.
There you go. Two reputable guys. Me, I'm deeply disappointed in myself that I even mentioned that just now. And we're going to go have a debate about it afterwards. As we approach the end of the show, I'd like to ask Dan Cummins if people wanted to find out more about your work as an instructional designer rather than as a videographer, especially faculty who may be listening to this radio show, what's the best way for them to find out about you, meet with you, and where on the web can we see any evidence of your work?
Unfortunately, most of the evidence of my work is behind closed doors at the moment because it's primarily in particular courses that only the faculty and students have access to. But I'm happy to show anyone anything that I've done, you know, on my own computer or anything like that, or provide alternate means for them to check it out. probably the best way is to either come visit us at ATS. We're in Surge 2 at UC Davis. My particular office is in Surge 3 across the way. So if you're in that building, you can always stop by the main area up front and come ask for me, and they'll know who I am. You can also email me, DJ Cummins, C-O-M-I-N-S, at UC Davis. I'd actually welcome. I love talking about technology and pedagogy, both with faculty of various tenures and graduate students and the like as well. So if you have anything you want to talk about in those regards, shoot me an email or come stop by my my cubicle.
Excellent. Well, that was Dan Cummins, instructional designer of academic technology services at UC Davis.